Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Dialysis Advocates, and it'll be hosted by Arlene Mullen. I want to remind everyone that Whistleblower Summit is coordinated with these shows and Marcel Reed, and I invite everyone, if you can make it to the Whistleblower Summit in D.C. January 29th, 30th, and 31st, the public is cordially invited. It's free. There's a lot of information there, a lot of networking to be done, and if you, when you find out what all is going on and going wrong, you'll be highly surprised and maybe motivated to be a little more active than what we are. And I think if I get any more active, Arlene, I'm probably going to just go up in a big puff of smoke. But anyway, everybody, here's your host for this evening, Arlene Mullen.
Thanks, Marty. And thank you, Marcel Reed and Marty Oakley, for giving this opportunity to educate dialysis patients and to give us this time. I am co-hosted with Greg Coleman also tonight, and we have Dr. Moskowitz on that is, I'm pretty excited to have on. I've talked to him on several occasions. So welcome.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Moskowitz. Yeah. Well, first of all, if you could tell us who you are and what is exactly that you do.
Well, I'm a nephrologist. I trained at WashU in St. Louis and was told that kidney failure was irreversible, that it was nothing but scar tissue. It was actually quite easy to reverse if you just use the right ACE inhibitor at a high enough dose.
Why doesn't every nephrologist or kidney doctor do the same thing?
Well, it turns out that dialysis, kidney failure, is the foundation of my subspecialty of nephrology. And unlike the old days, I guess, when pediatricians were happy to get rid of polio wards with Salk's new vaccine, modern-day nephrologists have, at least adult nephrologists, have no inkling at all, no desire to get rid of their paychecks. And so my boss at St. Louis U didn't actually fired me over it. And the people that I trained with at WashU did nothing to help me. And, in fact, nobody in healthcare that I've talked to in the 25 years since has had the slightest inclination to stop dialysis. So it's not just the end of a disease that's interesting and, I think, newsworthy, but also the end of the profession. Healthcare is not the same in this, you know, not the same profession that it was 60 years ago when I was a kid. It's become a very greedy industry.
Well, that definitely explains dialysis. And I know when I started fighting this industry 20 years ago, they destroy everything. Because it's not about healthcare. I feel it's about nothing more than profit and the fact that our patients are generating money just due to the fact that that's how they make their money. And the government pays a hefty portion of the bill, if not all of it in some cases, as far as with Medi-Cal and Medicare and Medicaid. My other question is, what makes this so special?
Well, it was the first example in which a molecule made a difference clinically. So this molecular medicine has been around really since the 1940s when they found the amino acid difference in hemoglobin that that made sickle cell hemoglobin act differently. But there's still no cure for sickle cell disease. Ironically, actually, we've found that ACE inhibitors are useful in sickle cell disease. We can treat crises with ACE inhibitors. It looks like overactivity of ACE is not only important for most kidney disease and is easily treated because ACE inhibitors have been around for 40 years now. There are a lot of other diseases. There may be 2/3 of human diseases that should benefit from an ACE inhibitor. Diseases with otherwise lethal outcomes like emphysema, sickle cell is very hard to treat, but with an ACE inhibitor becomes manageable. Peripheral vascular disease, coronary artery disease, even psychiatric diseases, and even viral diseases may benefit from ACE inhibitors or ARBs, angiotensin II receptor blockers. So it looks like scientifically it's a very special case. And healthcare-wise, if we can't even get rid of dialysis, which is awful, it's got awful mortality and expense and morbidity. It's horrible to be on the machine for the 3 years on average that you manage to stay alive. If we can't get rid of a disease anymore, then there's no real point, doing anything. There's no point doing genomics and molecular medicine and precision medicine. So I think healthcare has gotten frozen in an anti-innovative rut. And unless it gets freed from the rut, all this money that we're spending on research is essentially wasted money.
All right, Dr. Moskowitz,
I wanted to ask, what is an ACE inhibitor? What is an ACE inhibitor? I see this on commercials and I have no idea what it is.
So ACE is, so an ACE inhibitor is just a drug that blocks ACE, which is an enzyme. The E of ACE is enzyme. And the A stands for angiotensin, and the C stands for converting. And it's basically like a little scissor. It's a protein that exists on the surface of cells that line the vasculature. So the vasculature is like pipes, and the blood flows through it, and the inner lining of the pipes have ACE, this enzyme, sticking out and sampling the fluid. And it turns out that that it is critical to keeping the pipes from bursting, from maintaining the velocity at a constant level, for blood pressure, for plaque buildup, for telling downstream tissues like the kidney that they need to grow in case flow goes up. It's important for every single organ. It may actually be the reason why we age.
Oh, wow. Sign us up. Greg?
Yes.
Marty and I are ready. Greg, do you want to take over?
Sure. Dr. Moskowitz, you have this wonderful research, which I've talked to you before years ago, and yet we still have people like me and millions of others suffering and dying as a result of end-stage renal disease. Is that by design?
Well, I think so. I mean, I wish I had the advertising budget to get the word out, because there's no point discovering something if you can't get the word out. I mean, half the battle is education, or marketing is another word for it. And for that, you rely on the authorities, the people who are getting paid salaries, to evaluate what's being done and to spread the word to the public, people who are trusted, who are getting tax deductions like 501c3 charities like the National Kidney Foundation or the American Society of Nephrology, as well as for-profit companies like DaVita and Fresenius that claim they're trying to solve renal failure. And Medicare, you know, who's collecting taxpayers' money and paying for dialysis. None of these people, none of these institutions, none of these agencies, nonprofit or for-profit, have ever, you know, made a peep about my results. And it's not just a theory. I mean, I'm up to 4,000 patients now. Nobody has even tried to replicate my results, which is unheard of in a supposedly scientific community. If somebody makes outlandish claims, like the cold fusion claims at the University of Utah a few decades ago, you know, the people in the best physics journals in the world tried very quickly to duplicate their results. Well, I've published this, and I've put it out on social media and, you know, referred to it in the New England Journal and the British Medical Journal, and people just ignore it. Nephrologists just ignore it. Primary care guys just ignore it. Primary care associations ignore it. And I've been, you know, trying to get word out every day for the last 25 years, because every one of the 300 Americans who die every day, and roughly 20 times that number worldwide, I feel personally responsible for.
Wow. So are you saying healthcare isn't innovative anymore, and that is the plan pretty much?
I'm saying healthcare is criminal.
Okay.
I'm saying it is deliberately indifferent to life-saving cures. And when you're dealing in medicine, you're either helping somebody or you're hurting them. Inaction can be criminal. And I think it's like standing by and watching people die on the machine. And the other thing that bothers me about this, no end, is that ACE, overactivity, the reason I was looking for it and found it was it's the African gene. It's the reason why people of color, people from West Africa and Hispanics, go on the kidney machine 3 times to 5 times more than whites do. And so there's a huge racial disparity in dialysis. You'd think that society would be even more keen to try to end this racial inequality. And yet, you know, it's like poor people of color are the ones most likely to be on the machine. To me, it's nothing short of medical slavery.
It is.
You know, Dr. Moskowitz, a few years ago, I did some research on another topic, and what I came across were these what they call Deadpool hedge funds. And it's where they invest in groups of people who have like leukemia, breast cancer, this kind of, and they're actually hedging a bet on how long you'll live. And it was brought out as this was the reason there will never be a cure for cancer, breast cancer, any of this stuff, is because these hedge funds would collapse and there's billions of dollars in them. And they said that this is exactly why there will never be a cure. Even if one's found, it'll never be made public. And to me, that's exactly what you're talking about. The profit incentive in this to keep this quiet
is
however, too massive.
Right. And that has been the case until tonight. But you can make as much money shorting a stock as you can, you know, going long on it. I know Warren Buffett has, you know, owns 10% of DaVita, and or maybe 15%. He keeps investing in more and more. And once the savvy investors hear about how shaky a foundation dialysis is on, I think they're going to dump their stock.
Yeah,
and
I
wouldn't
believe
be
that
surprised
too.
If people hear that tonight and start dumping. And once
that happens,
public health, will follow.
Right. I do believe that in these companies, it's not about health care. And I think that's what got me when 20 years ago when I quit working in dialysis, because it's the cheaper the care, the more profit they make. And this is about profit. It's not about human life. Greg can tell you, as far as a patient, what it's like to be in some of these clinics. And I had two terminations today, and they don't have to answer to anybody or give any information out. But I think in medicine, they treat the symptoms instead of the disease.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, uremia is very, it's unstoppable, and that's why people only live 3 years on average. It's dialysis does very little to stop what's going on.
But I know when I started over 30 years ago that our patients could live 20 years. They have excellent care. It was for the patient and not, and I guess my question is, who owns the prescription pad? The companies do, not the doctor.
Right. In the old days, in the 70s, 60s, you couldn't be diabetic and go on the kidney machine. Whereas nowadays most of the people going on dialysis are diabetics. I'm diabetic. I don't know if I'm going to need the machine or not. I'm hoping I won't. I'm hoping my protocol will keep me off.
right.
In the old days, if you had polycystic kidney disease, say, that only affected your kidneys and not your heart, you'd go on the machine, you'd live forever. You still do. It's just the diabetics and hypertensives now that are 90% of dialysis, who happen to be the ones that can keep off the machine. They also get cardiac disease along with kidney disease, and they die of a cardiac death. After 3 years. Whereas the PKD people do great.
Right. I was going to just ask one more thing, and I already forgot, so I'm going to hand you over to Greg, okay?
Sure.
Dr. Moskowitz, you said you used the term reverse kidney failure.
Yep.
I was under the impression that what your protocol does is prevent kidney disease from occurring. Have you made further progress in reversing kidney failure after it has already started? And if so, at what stage can you still reverse it?
That's a great question. So preventing is if you start somebody who's doing really well, who's in stage two, which is between 90 and 60 percent, basically, kidney function, you can keep them from dipping below 60.
Okay.
So you can essentially prevent them from getting worse. The next stage is from 60 down to 30, and that's stage three kidney disease, and then it goes 30 down to 15 is 4, and 15 and below is 5, which includes dialysis when you get down to about 5 or 10%. I've actually taken people lately for the last 4 or 5 years. I've been working with people even at stage 5. In fact, I work every day with a woman now in Houston who's in stage 5. And I've been able to essentially freeze them where they're at, or even buy them, up to 20 or something. So reversing the damage that they've got. And they've stayed off for like 18 months, 12 months. The Houston lady's 9 months, a year for two people in a Haitian clinic. So I'll now take care of anybody at any stage. I used to just stop at stage 3. Now I go to 4 and 5.
And, well, that's amazing.
Most of the time it works. It doesn't always work. But so there are a few situations where it doesn't work very well. If you're dried out, if you're taking a lot of Lasix because your legs are really swollen, because you have heart failure, mm-hmm. and so your cardiologist is giving you a lot of Lasix and your volume depleted, then my ACE inhibitor approach doesn't really work very well. And I wind up fighting with the cardiologist on the dose of Lasix.
Okay.
But as long as you're not on a heavy dose of diuretics, then this ACE inhibitor approach works fine.
So throughout the years, it sounds like you've been real busy. Looks like you made a lot of progress from when we first spoke, because you're treating people through all the stages of kidney failure. So it sounds like you've actually perfected or getting close to perfection with your protocol, which is amazing. And I thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate it. It's fun. I love doing it. I mean, I wish I could keep people off. The other thing I wish I could do is I wish I could get people off the machine once they go on. Because occasionally people come off and it's not clear what the circumstances are. Apparently the more urine output you have, the better your chances of finally coming off the kidney machine. But I would love to, and I wouldn't be surprised if high-dose quinoprim, wouldn't help. Patients who are already on dialysis, maybe more of them could come off. I don't think that going the other way, getting the transplant, staying in the machine, wearing a portable kidney machine, I just don't think those are as good an option as getting your own kidney function back.
I agree 100%. Some people mistake kidney transplantation for a cure, but it's not. It's just another mode of dialysis, and you have to take some very toxic immunosuppressant drugs, which create other problems for you.
Yeah, they're not mild drugs by any means. And the transplanted kidney poops out after 5 or 10 years. They don't last forever.
Right.
And there's such a shortage. So that's the other reason why dialysis should be prevented for the 90% who it can be, because the best way to give everybody a kidney transplant on time without having to wait for it is decreasing demand, not increasing supply. But if you decrease demand by 90%, the number of cadaver kidneys from dead people would already be more than the 10% of patients who would still need to be going on dialysis. So there are 100,000 Americans every year who go on dialysis. If you could prevent 90,000 of them, so there'd still only be 10,000 people who needed dialysis. There are already 13,000 cadaver kidneys. So every
right.
one of those 10,000 could get a cadaver kidney and not have to go on dialysis at all. The country could be dialysis free.
So the dialysis industry is practicing what you're practicing in reverse for profits.
Right. You got that right. And the whole nephrology subspecialty is backing them up. And
well,
so
it's a special club.
Yep. I don't think this is going to come from within healthcare. I don't think the change is going to come from within healthcare. I think the change is going to come from the patients, from outside, from people being outraged that their relatives or they themselves have to go on dialysis and die prematurely.
What can we do to get your protocol into, well, as close as to mainstream as possible? Like you said, is it going to start with the patients?
I think for some reason the media has not picked this up. I mean, I've been calling reporters, and there are a lot of reasons. I think the chief reason is that reporters feel, they're not confident about reading scientific papers. They really rely on being told, what's good science, what isn't good science. So the problem here is that the establishment is refusing to do its job, we pay them to do. And so somebody else is going to have to step up to the bat. And I think what's happening in this internet world that we live in, where news can come at you, you know, not just the three usual TV channels that we watched in the 50s, but can come at you in podcasts like tonight and on social media and so forth, is that everybody has to decide for themselves whether the arguments make sense. And people are relying less and less on prestige and labels to convince them of what to believe. And the other thing is, in this particular case, all you have to do is contact us at GenomeMed. You know, click on contact us at genomed.com, GenomeD.com, and you'll see whether it works or not. You can try it out for yourself. And you got nothing to lose, absolutely nothing to lose. If you do nothing, you'll end up on dialysis and die on average in 3 years. If you do something, you know, the best that could happen is you stay off forever. In somewhere in between, you stay off for years at a time. But I think everybody should find out what their creatinine is, what their kidney function is. And if it's below 90%, you know, consider going to GenomeMed and saying hello. We'll say hello right back.
Well, you know, I've asked that question several times, and I've been on dialysis for over 16 years now. They can't tell me what type. They can't tell me what percentage of kidney function I have. But you just cleared it up. So I don't understand. Is it a matter of just desire to do something, or the lack of desire to do something? Because you're a nephrologist, correct?
Yeah, but I'm a traitor to my class.
Yeah, well,
the truth is, the nephrologists are trained not to save people. They're trained not to take care of people. They're trained to get them on the machine. They're trained to get them on the machine as smoothly as possible.
Exactly. Because my question was, like I said, you are a nephrologist. I don't care if you're in the fold or not. Just because you decided to use your knowledge and your skills for good instead of evil, that doesn't take away your profession. But
yep.
I've asked that same question. How much kidney function do I have? I've actually had nephrologists ask me, why do you need to know? I mean, that's something that you wouldn't expect to hear from a quote-unquote expert.
Yeah, but look at what he's saying. I mean, so you're on the machine right now, or you have a transplant?
No, I'm still on dialysis.
So you're on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow you've made it 16 years without having a heart attack, which is phenomenal.
That is because I do home dialysis with the next day system.
Right. And
it's easy on your body.
Yeah. And what got you on the machine in the first place? What caused your dialysis?
They can't tell me that either, but as close as I can come to figuring it out, when I first went in the emergency room that night back in 2002, we came up with hypertension
yeah.
in combination with ibuprofen, which I was taking for a painful knee injury.
Right.
So that combination proved deadly
right.
to my kidneys.
Okay. Okay. Well, so in 2002, I was just publishing my paper. So I can't say I could have kept you off.
Right.
But, yeah, that's the thing. Nobody should be using ibuprofen. I mean, if you
yeah.
have high blood pressure, you know, you should. So only half the people in this country with high blood pressure have it controlled.
Right.
Only half the people with diabetes know that they have diabetes. We do a terrible job of preventive care. You know, what passes for prevention from public health authorities is obesity, you know, and lose weight. So everything is your own damn fault if you're fat. But genes are surely more important. And the genes for obesity plus the you know, ready availability of calories is what's causing obesity, and also the genes for diabetes are causing diabetes. It's not just a failure of will. It's not a Calvinist punishment to get diabetes and hypertension. Instead of berating the public for being so damn fat, the public health system should actually be detecting high blood pressure, should be detecting diabetes, it should be detecting kidney failure. You know, shouldn't leave it just to the National Kidney Foundation. All they
right.
do is tell people, you've got kidney failure, go see a nephrologist. The nephrologist doesn't want to protect you from going on dialysis. He just wants to collect you in a stable of dialysis
right.
patients, because you get 10, 15 patients, you're making $300K a year as a nephrologist.
Right.
And the NKF is just a feeder of dialysis patients to the nephrology community.
I have no respect for the National Kidney Foundation. That's, I mean, personally, I'm getting off the road there, so go on, Mark.
Right. Well, I think their 501c3 status should be revoked, because they're supposed to be studying and researching kidney failure so as to prevent it. And I come up with this, you know, with this treatment that works, and they won't tell anybody about it because I'm a corporation, and yet they have no problem, you know.
Right. Well, Amgen, accepting
million-dollar donations
right.
from Coca-Cola.
Right. Yeah, well, they're everywhere. But also, well, it's part of Warren Buffett also is on Coca-Cola board. But I do find that the National Kidney Foundation, when I first started, I gave them the same documents, thinking they were the good guys, as I gave the U.S. Senate that had the OIG and the GAO inspections mm-hmm. and found our patients at risk. But they did nothing. But to me, they used patients for lobby. I know we're getting off for lobbying
mm-hmm.
for what the industry wants. In this industry, I keep telling people, Dr. Moskowitz, is check the boards. It's them. Even the oversight is them.
Right. Oh, right. No, the whole thing is that's actually the problem with the entire healthcare system in the U.S. and in every country. That the people there is no accountability. The people are kept ignorant, and it's an old boys club that gives each other grants, keeps each other employed,
right.
does as little as possible for the populace while ripping them off as much as they can.
I remember reading in the old Doki, I'm sure they've changed it by now, but I've got an old Doki, that they were given an unrestricted grant the guidelines from Amgen for Epotin.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's
well,
right there. I have it
right.
on there. You know, it's an unrestricted grant for the medication that they overused, the gold Cadillac. of screwing the government. And it actually harmed patients.
Right. I remember the year when EPO came out and dialysis doubled in costs from $3 billion a year to $6
billion. Well, that's where they made their money, is injectables.
Right. And Amgen had a breakfast for everybody at the ASN that year with, you know, orange juice and waffles and pancakes. And it was the most lavish thing. And obviously they could afford it because they just got $3 billion that year.
Yeah.
And now it's $30 billion. Everything's times 10. Half of
I was going to ask
people.
You real quickly about warfarin. I find warfarin, I think it's warfarin. No, not warfarin. Myosin, it's that medication instead of the Epogen. I can't think of the name of it. It starts with an M. It says do not give to dialysis patients. It causes stroke, but it's cheaper than Epogen. Mycerna?
Yeah.
Mycera?
I don't know the know the EPO
generic
world.
Yeah, well, thank God. But I mean, they turned around and they use it, and because the government pays for Epogen in the composite rate now, but now they're going to transfusions, and I think it's Mycera. They say clearly on it, do not use on dialysis patients, can cause strokes. And we've had a couple of patients that stroked out using Mycera, but they used Epogen before.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound right.
Well.
So there, EPO does two things that I know of. It raises the crit, and high crits are associated with stroke. But apparently it also causes vasoconstriction. And so either one could be responsible for the stroke.
Well,
they're little tricks.
Also,
I mean, they're androgens. Decadurabilin actually increases the effectiveness of EPO. So you can cut your EPO dose in half if you give decadurabilin testosterone.
But that's the golden Cadillac up until they put it on the you know, put it on the composite rate. Now I find almost patients are getting blood transfusions because they can charge the government for an injectable, which is a blood transfusion.
I think Medicare is so stupid. Essentially, people do exactly what they can get away with with Medicare. And Medicare is almost criminally irresponsible with what it allows. They act like
Medicare,
they have no control over anything. But
the thing is, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I already forgot.
I mean, they act like they have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
And yet everybody...
They have full knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, this whole electronic medical record thing, that has completely... transform medicine for the worse. And, you know, the theory was that it would make medicine cheaper and fewer errors if everybody computerized the thing. Now it takes more time to see a patient. There are more errors. Basically, people are publishing bullshit for notes because everything is templated. So there's less veracity. But it makes the Medicare bureaucrats happy because there's 20 pages of note now instead of one. It's just nonsense. People need to take over HHS and shake it up and make it good for people again.
I knew a public health official that said that's the most useless in, you know, organization or department that there is. They do more harm than good.
Take the NIH. The NIH had a reason after World War II because there were no medical schools. So they trained all the scientists to go to medical schools. They're completely obsolete. There is half the money for the NIH goes to the intramural program, these huge buildings with people who have these sinecures of jobs. they write a paragraph, they get $1 million grant, whereas the funding outside the NIH, the extramural funding program, is funding below 10th percentile and has been for 30 years. So they should just get rid of the entire intramural NIH and save half the budget.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't produce anything of any clinical value.
Well, I was going to say, and then I'm that's my last question. I noticed when I was working, the pump speeds on the machine started going up. And in Egypt, they had a young, I think it was 14 or 15, they called it speed dialysis. But it's not uncommon to see 4, 4:50, and these people already have congestive heart failure due to the fluid not coming off. Or am I wrong?
Well, so the velocity in your bloodstream, getting back to ACE, our friend, is regulated by normally, physiologically, and ACE is the primary regulator. And when speed goes up, ACE gets activated. So if they're going to rev up the speed, you know, 300 mils per minute or higher to get a shorter dialysis time, then they absolutely need to start using ACE inhibitors and lower potassiums in the bath, because whenever you use an ACE inhibitor, the K goes up. So use 2K baths or 0K baths.
Yeah, because I've noticed
don't
when I worked...
ACE.
Right. I noticed when I was working, we had a choice of K1, K2, K3. Now it's like K2, that's it. And the lab work is sent to another state, and it's not even accurate when you receive the report. Instead, we're done away with for potassium because it was a cost. It cost money.
And that's crazy because the K has to be absolutely right.
They do two now. That's all that's available in the majority of these clinics. It's
there,
two. It is. They did away with
one
and three.
Right. No, there should be gradations because some people come in with Ks of seven.
I don't think they care. There is always somebody else. We find a lot of patients that are on dialysis that didn't need to be on dialysis.
Well, that's true.
That's
my
last question. Greg?
Yes.
Oh, well, Arlene, I just wanted to say I don't think they care. I don't think they don't care. I know they don't care.
No.
It's a fact. They do not care about dialysis patients. All they care about is their bottom line, and that's it.
You know, it takes a lot of courage for you to say that, Greg, because as long as your life depends on getting dialysis, most people won't utter a peep. They just will not utter a peep because they're afraid they'll get, you know, retribution of some kind. You know,
right.
Like
well,
cervical.
That's true. It happens.
Yeah. Really?
I mean, I've had the machine set to make me sick. I've seen it done to other patients. But it's like you said, what do I really have to lose? I'm definitely going to check out your gentlemed.com, which I'm already there. I've been there earlier today. And I'm going to go ahead through your whole website and check out the information. And I had one question, too, but I forgot also. So, Arlene, I'm catching up with you.
No, you have a long way to go, pal.
Well, the last thing
in
I'd
your
like
dreams,
to do.
Greg. Good try.
So world,
go on.
This world that we're going to live in, hopefully within 5 years, if I can get, you know, some funding to do some genotyping. Look how much we got with just knowing a single gene. But imagine where we, and so in the last 15 years, we were able to find hundreds of genes, thousands of genes actually, for cancer, for 6 different common cancers. And it looks like we should be able to solve any disease, including things like dementias, if we, you know, if we just do some genotyping. And to be honest, it looks like we could solve any disease in under a year for under $100,000.
Wow.
That's frightening.
And, you know,
do you think that can be done, and yet because of the financial incentive and just, I think, arrogance too, which you don't seem to have any of, but this arrogance, you talked about the decline of medical care, and I quite honestly have to agree with you there. And I learned recently about the difference between standard of care and quality of care. And it was explained mm-hmm. very carefully to me by CMS that standard of care is basically the least the medical providers can do and still make a profit. And quality of care is like what Congress gets, these golden fleece insurance policies. There's no expense spared. We are paying for that. This whole thing, I've noticed, and I'm not a young woman, but I have noticed this change, especially over the last year, in the attitude of doctors, of hospitals. There is actually no interest whatsoever in your health condition. They go through that protocol where they type that into the computer and your symptoms, right. And it prints out this protocol of all the therapies and treatments and medications and surgeries that could possibly apply to this, and they just start going down the list. They aren't paying any attention to the patient at all. And I think it's a dangerous time to be trusting your health to a physician in most cases.
Well, at least a new one. No,
yeah.
I think CMS has made everybody into a computer. They don't like physicians.
Yeah.
They want everybody to be a robot.
Well, they explained it to me that this was how they control costs, is by doing things this way. And I said, you're costing people their lives. Why would you do this? Well, you know, we've got costs to think about. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, they've got costs to raise. Look, healthcare, the whole thing is a racket. Smedley
yes.
Butler wrote the war was a racket in the 30s. Healthcare is a racket now. They say they want to mm-hmm. control costs. Well, if they really wanted to control costs, we'd be dialysis free by now. The dialysis
yeah.
is the most fixed condition in healthcare. They don't want to control costs. They want to make costs go up. And then CMS, it's not their money. It's taxpayers' money. It's not their lives.
Right.
It's poor people's lives. And
mm-hmm.
Private insurance, they're pass-throughs. If they've got high
yes.
costs, they can justify raising premiums the next year. And every year, premiums go up. So this whole thing, you know, why is healthcare going out of control? Why is it moving, doubling from 8 to 17% of GDP? Because that's exactly what healthcare wants to do. And
yeah.
nobody's controlling it. And Medicare for all,
wow.
like the Democrats want, that's not going to do it mm-hmm. either. Because Medicare is single payer for dialysis. It has been since 72. And they do not want to lose their jobs. Those bureaucrats do not want to lose their salaries. So Medicare for all is not going to do quality.
Yeah.
We'll still have community standard.
That
Sorry.
Scares me because in dialysis, it's like they're just throwing money out in the street. And when you can have CEOs of companies of these dialysis companies, I know one year about quite a few years ago, not that many, that made $68 million. That was just his bonus.
Isn't
that money going to health care for the patients that it was intended to when you turn around and just have K-2? It's cheaper to care. I know when I was working, we went for-profit, and we
mm-hmm.
were given an on- and off-pad of the cheapest supplies you've ever – even the tape was measured – all the special baths disappeared. And I guess my question is, who owns the prescription pads? It's not the doctor. And I cringe because I can just see dialysis going in other fields of medicine. You would never treat a cancer patient like you do a dialysis patient and not have the news all over it.
I have something to say about everything. I think I think we're like hopelessly misguided in our cancer treatments too.
Right, I do too.
I think we're barking up the wrong tree. I think we ought to use differentiation therapy, not poison.
Right.
The cancer is part of our own body and just needs a little help to differentiate like we did when we were embryos. You didn't treat your embryo with poison to get it to differentiate into organs and arms and limbs. But that's what they're doing for cancers. And, you know, I think we just need to get a little more sophisticated.
Right.
Dr. Moskowitz, I've seen a lot here recently on the detrimental effects of chemotherapy and radiation, which I have no medical background and I'm not trying to pretend like I do. But just common sense logic told me years ago that applying chemotherapy, this toxic concoction of poisons that poison the body so bad that the hair jumps off the head, you get violently ill, you vomit, you have chronic diarrhea, mm-hmm. you can't talk, you can't do it because it's just, and we're doing this to children, by the way, or mm-hmm. radiation, which is known to cause cancer. And there's a lot coming out about that now, about mammograms being the major cause of breast cancer, and they're totally useless anyway. They've admitted that, but they said they have so much money invested in them that they have to keep using them. Johns Hopkins came out 2 years ago with that report that 2.5 million people had been diagnosed with cancer that never had it, most particularly women with breast cancer. There is too much information out there by credible sources that what they're doing to us is not helpful. Someone I came in contact with some years ago, somebody I respect tremendously, is a Dr. Andy Matiotis, and he was the former head of biology and pathology of cancer at the University of Illinois. And they, in some downtime, he and his staff in his lab replicated the research that was supplied to the FDA for chemotherapy and found that they had, of course, rigged the results. He went to the administrators of the hospital and said, "We've got to quit recommending this. We're killing people. We're not helping them." They fired him. And this was my first experience hearing from somebody with his credentials. He taught at Harvard. He taught at Iowa State. That here this man, who was widely respected, renowned for his research and the work that he did, gets fired for saying that these things are killing people. What has gone wrong here? I don't understand. It's like we're all guinea pigs. And when I listen to this talk about dialysis and where you've discovered a way for at least some people to get relief from this, and they're blocking you every way they can, what is wrong with these people?
Well, I'm glad I got fired with a great company. It's not new. Medicine has always had its head up its ass. This guy Semmelweis figured out how to wash your hands, uh-huh. and then he would deliver babies, and the women wouldn't die of sepsis. And he was only copying midwives who did this, routinely. But this was in the 1840s before Pasteur, before they understood about germs. And the professor couldn't believe that something as simple as washing your hands was all that it took. And he ignored Semmelweis, who went nuts. Semmelweis, his outcomes were so much better. But the professor wouldn't even look at it. And so Semmelweis committed suicide 10 years later. I think we don't look at outcomes. We think more about theories, and we dismiss evidence because it doesn't fit a theory, when we should be paying more attention to outcomes. We should be a lot humbler and a lot less arrogant that we think we're sure we know what's going on. We should be willing, mm-hmm. every scientist should be willing to drop his theory if the data, the outcomes, don't support it, or if the outcomes support somebody else's theory instead. That's the problem with science these days.
Wow.
It's the same. The people in control of it are unwilling to be proven wrong. because their whole career depends on them still being right, even if they're wrong. It's like the generals in Vietnam. I mean, it's just a human trait to never give up because you lose face.
Wow.
Look at Vietnam, 55,000 people sacrificed because McNamara didn't want to lose face.
That's just, that upsets me. That upsets me something terrible. And I think that's a problem when you get into these highly skilled areas. There seems to be this sense of, even if I'm wrong, I'm not wrong. Look at who I am. Look at what
right.
I do.
I can't
you
be
know,
wrong. I'm the editor
yes.
of this journal. I'm the
right.
I'm the full professor. It's just
yes.
It's an arrogance. What
mm-hmm.
Marty, what you said.
Yeah, I just that always has struck me with people. I think for one thing, it's admirable that you have these gifts. I wish I had them. I don't. But if I did, I would like to think I would be humble about it. I'd be thankful I had it, and hopefully I could help people. But, you know, I think that's a driving force in a lot of this. People either have the nature to be a helper or a user. And
yeah.
I think what's happened in the medical community is the majority of these people are users, and they see their patients and these procedures and therapies and everything else simply as a means to enrich themselves, and the patient becomes virtually non-existent or doesn't matter. And I think that has come full bloom. Go ahead.
You know, I think everybody goes into medicine with high hopes. I don't think there are very many people who go in to make money, because it's not an easy way to make money. But what happens is during training, you're told that you're an idiot and that the professor is the only one who knows anything. You're exposed to all this arrogance in spades. And you're gradually taught that your opinion doesn't matter and that you're incompetent. You're incapable of formulating any theories that could possibly compete with the professor. And so gradually what happens is you give up and you become kind of an aide-de-camp for the general professor, you know, writing papers and putting the professor's name on
right.
them, doing essentially what the professor
Jeez.
Tells you to do. And you give up your own independence of mind. And so I think it's just the blind leading the blind. All of that is fine for the business people who want the status quo to continue. So they want brainless
right.
research that's doing make work that doesn't ever change the clinical outcome of the disease. That's perfect for
okay.
the lucrative status quo.
Right. Okay, Dr. Moskowitz, we've got about a minute and a half left here. Can you give us your website, and is there contact information there?
Yeah, the website's just genomed.com, and on the left-hand banner, it says Contact Us. And just click
okay.
on that, give me your email, and I'll write you right back.
All right, that sounds good. You've been an excellent guest, very informative. Arlene, did you have anything you wanted to add before we close down
yeah,
here?
Yeah, I want to thank him, but I think we need to have him back again.
Yeah.
We really do.
I have nothing left.
Well, yeah. we'll think of something here.
Okay.
But
there
I wish
maybe
to
you'll
thank
have some
you.
Data.
Yeah, that would. But I think this educated, I've worked in dialysis, and this has been refreshing. I mean, really refreshing.
Yeah.
Greg, thank you.
Greg.
Yeah.
Greg, go ahead.
Oh, you're welcome.
Greg,
yep.
thanks so much to all of you. But if you're interested in trying to come off the machine, let's talk, because all I have to do is work with your nephrologist. You know, I'd like to see if we could get you off, because you just had acute renal failure 16 years ago. And, a third of people come off with
okay.
acute
wow.
renal failure.
What?
We've got
10
seconds, everybody. We've got 10
okay,
seconds.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Arlene, Greg, thank you. And Dr. Moskowitz, thank especially to you. We'll see you all next week. Everybody have a good evening and good night.
Good night.